following the bad examples. Give us wisdom, Father, to apply these words to our life. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen. And you know, and as we've looked at, and as I preached about last week, that is what we're doing. We're looking at the example of Israel, the example that's been recorded for us. These things have been written for us that we might have an example, the good ones and the bad ones. And we've seen in the last week. We've already seen Israel complaining, and we've seen God send them quail, more quail than they'd ever know what to do with. Quail, yeah, until they were sick of it. So we've seen that, and then we've seen Aaron and Miriam questioning Moses' leadership, and the Lord handling that situation. But today we're at Kadesh Barnea, wilderness of Paran, and this could have been the end of their wilderness journey. It could have been really short, right? But that's not the way that it went. So let's start and go ahead and the first reading is a long one. Cameron, why don't you go ahead and do that one? Chapter 13, 1 through 15. Because you get all the names that way.
Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Send out for yourself men, so that they may spy out the land of Canaan, which I am going to give to the sons of Israel. You shall send a man from each of their father's tribes, every one a leader among them." So Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran, the commandment of the Lord, all of them men who were leaders of the sons of Israel. These then were their names: from the tribe of Reuben, Shemua, the son of Zakur; from the tribe of Simeon, Shaphat, the son of Hori; from the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh; from the tribe of Issachar, Igal, the son of Joseph; from the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, the son of Nun; from the tribe of Benjamin, Palti, the son of Raphu; from the tribe of Zebulun, Gadiel, the son of Sodi; from the tribe of Manasseh, Gadi, the son of Susi; from the tribe of Dan, Amiel, the son of Gamali; from the tribe of Asher, Sether, the son of Michael; from the tribe of Naphtali, Nabi, the son of Vophsi; from the tribe of Gad, Geul, the son of Machi.
Okay. Well, very good. Very good. Not an easy list to get through, but you did a good job. So, what were the instructions that were given? And from whom were these instructions? Was this just Moses deciding this was a good thing to do? No. So the Lord gave Moses instructions, huh? Said, "Look, let's go. Go spy out the land which I'm giving to the children of Israel, and let every tribe select a leader, select a man." And of course, this isn't the original 12 tribes. These are the 12 tribes that are going to get, the land is going to be divided among. Now, there's no spy from the tribe of Levi. Now, the Levites have their own responsibilities now, and so we see the two tribes of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh. Okay, but these were well-respected men from every tribe, men who were the heads of the children of Israel, right? Trusted men to go in. Now let's take a look at what they're told to do. Harper, read for us 16 through 20.
These are the names of the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land. But Moses called Hoshea the son of Nun, Joshua. When Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, he said to them, "Go up there into the Negev, then go up into the hill country. See what the land is like, and whether the people who live in it are strong or weak, whether they are few or many. How is the land in which they live? Is it good or bad? And how are the cities in which they live? Are they like open camps or with fortifications? How is the land? Is it fat or lean? Are there trees in it or not? made an effort then to get some of the fruits of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes.
Okay. All right. And is so what do you make? What do you make of the instructions? Reasonable, sound instructions? What?
Thorough.
Yes. Yes. It's made clear all the things that they should be looking for. Right? You're scouting out the land. You want to know what it's like. You want to know what the vegetation is like, the forests are like. You want to know what the people are like. You want to know what the cities are like. Right? This is the land, again, that the Lord emphasized back here that he was about to give them. Right in verse 2. Land of Canaan, which I'm giving to the children of Israel. So go and see it. And come back and make a report. Okay, so the twelve. Well, Gary.
In some sense, I'm almost thinking that with what occurred, that might have been a test of their resolve to send them out, let them look at the land. They clearly came back with a report that it was going to be rather daunting to take it, but that report should have reflected their trust in God that, okay, it's a lot to do, but we'll get through it.
Yes.
And
yes. Yeah, no, that's certainly the case. Certainly the case. So this is they are about to be tested. Right? Do you think the Lord needs the spies to go in to come back and report to Moses and then for Moses to tell him what the land is like?
No.
No. No, the Lord Jehovah doesn't need this report. It's not for his benefit. He knows what's there already. Yeah, Nathan?
And just like the challenge aspect of it, there's also the blessing.
Yeah.
You know, it is better than they probably even imagined. You know, yeah. They knew it was good, but it's going to exceed their expectations.
Yeah, they've heard that it's going to be good, that it's a land of plenty, but they don't really understand what that means, and the only point of comparison that they have is where they were from, where they've come from in Egypt, right? And so they're always pining after Egypt and all the vegetables and everything that they could get there, right? That's their idea of plenty. That's their idea of that. But they're, yeah. God's going to show them both the blessings and the challenge. And yes, it will be rather much of a test. Okay? So, in verses 21 through 25, we read about what happens. Kelsey, you want to read that? 21 through 25?
So they went up and spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob, near the entrance of Anak. And they went up through the south and came to Hebron. Ahiman, Shishai, and Talmah. The descendants of Anak were there. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. Then they came to the valley of Eshcol, and there cut down a branch with one cluster of grapes. They carried it between two of them on a pole. They also brought some of the pomegranates and figs. The place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster which the men of Israel cut down there. And they returned from spying out the land after 40 days.
Okay. So how much of the land were they able to see?
At least the initial portion that they have to navigate before they got into the whole land.
Well, it turns out that when they're talking about Rehob near the entrance of Hamath, that is actually very far to the north. So far, it's near the furthest extent to which Israel was going to conquer Canaan. I mean, the land they were going to be given. So, I mean, it is kind of amazing that in how much time?
40 days.
In 40 days, right? They're able to travel basically the whole length of the Promised Land and then come back. Right? They went a long ways, but this was I mean, are they traveling in wilderness?
Valleys.
Well, I mean, but is this area a wilderness? No.
No.
What do they have here? They have cities. Right? This is a place that has long been settled. Right? And there's in fact, I mean, what happened? What do we know about ancient history? And you know, for instance, the conflicts between, I mean, what are the major nations at play and the major powers at play in the ancient Near East? So we have Egypt.
Syria.
We have the Hittites in the north. The Hittites who were going to fight, have the giant battle with Ramses, the battle of Kadesh, and then later we'll have the powers to the east in Assyria and Babylon. Now, the way all of those nations would interact with each other is always through Canaan. Right? The road is through Canaan. I mean, this is, you know, we're not talking about, you know, spies having to cut their way through forest. No, this is a well-established civilized area with roads, right? And they could travel pretty quickly, and they're able to scout out things pretty well. What are some of the things that they see? What did they find? What do they find about the produce of the land?
Ground is very fertile.
Apparently very fertile, huh? They find pomegranates and figs. They find grapes and single clusters of grapes so big that two men have to carry it on a pole. Now that's kind of amazing to think of a cluster of grapes that big. But you know, it tells you something about how fertile the area is. But what else do they see?
Giants.
And they're specifically in Hebron, right? Hebron is an ancient city. I mean, it says it was built 7 years before Zoan. That's telling you how old it is. Who lived near Hebron before? And Abraham lived in that vicinity, I believe. But who are we told lives there? The descendants of Anak. And we'll talk about them, and we'll come to them a little further along too. We can read the next section before we talk about them. So they come, they're gone 40 days, and then they return. Now let's see what happens in 26 through. Well, let's go ahead and read through 33. 26 through 33. TJ, go ahead and take all of that.
They came back to Moses and Aaron in the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here's its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev, the Hittites, Jebusites, and Amorites live in the hill country, and the Canaanites live near the sea and along the Jordan. Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are." And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, "The land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there, the descendants of Anak, come from the Nephilim. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them."
Okay. So they come back, they make their report. What is it they have to say about the land? How fertile is it? What?
As promised.
As promised. Flowing with milk and honey. Right? That famous phrase. And this is its fruit. So it's everything that the Lord said it would be. But the people who dwell in that land are strong. The cities, they're not just camps, huh? They're fortified and very large. It's full of people. Full of people. The Amalekites, the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, the Canaanites. There's a lot of people here. Now, of course, was fulfilling the law, I mean, fulfilling the promise to Abraham just about giving this area to Israel? It's also going to be about judgment upon the people that were there. Right? They'd been told previously that the fullness of time for the judgment upon Canaanites was not yet here. Right? It was going to come. So God has multiple purposes in mind, as He usually does. But the cities are fortified, the cities are large. What is this stuff about giants? Who are these giants? Do you know anything about them?
The only other time that word is mentioned is in Genesis.
And it's just, yeah, and the word is indeed Nephilim, as TJ's Bible has it. Yeah, it referred to in Genesis, the Nephilim. It's the Hebrew word for giant. My Bible translates it giant in verse 33. Now, but what are we told about them? And what do we know about them? It's interesting. You can look them up and trace this family for a while. I don't know if anybody's ever done that.
So called.
Yeah.
Were they they're more fallen angels?
No. Well, no. But this is the one that there is that unusual phrase in Genesis. The sons of God and the sons of men, right? Where was that? That's Genesis 6. Yeah, when it says there were giants on the earth in those days, the sons of God came in to the daughters of men, and they bore children to them, but they were the mighty men who were of old, men of renown. But then again, it's hard to believe that it's actually them, because that family would die out when?
In the flood.
Right? In the flood. So
you say it's sons of God? What is that?
No, not... Some people have wanted to say that they were angels, but that we don't have evidence of that. Nathan, have you looked at that?
There are two views.
Yeah.
One would be that they are angels.
Yeah.
One would be that they were righteous, the righteous of the day.
From Seth, the descendants of Seth.
So those would be the two ways of looking at it. I don't have enough knowledge of it to comment that thoroughly on it, except I do know there are good brethren on both sides of that view.
Yeah. But it's one of those things that anything you do is just going to be speculation, because you have so little information. You know, you have basically one or two verses, right? And that's not enough to really answer the question.
But something. Oh, this last thing. So he came down.
I know. The language is interesting. Right? The language is interesting. But the descendants of Anak. Anak was the son of Arba, we read in Joshua. And is to be said to be the descendants of giants. They live in Hebron, and we're told that three sons are Ahiman, Shishai, and Talmai. What do you know? What else do you know about that family? What happens to them eventually? So they're in Hebron. Who is going to take Hebron eventually in the book of Joshua? Remember? Somebody who waits a really long time to get to go take the place that he'd been wanting to take. He had to wait 40 years or more. That was Caleb. So it's in the area that Caleb basically says when they're finally ready to go into the land, Joshua, let me go. I've been waiting 40 years to take this place that we spied out. The Lord told us we can take it. I want to go take it. Let me go. All right? And he goes. And he drives them out. he drives the descendants of Anak out of there. Does anybody remember where they go? When they're driven out of Hebron, they go down to Philistia and they settle in Gath. Okay, now I'll ask you, do you know of any giants later on in the Bible that come from Gath?
Goliath.
Yeah. Goliath comes from the place where the descendants of Anak went when they were driven out of there. And of course we see, and is Goliath the only giant in his family? No, there are more. Right? And they're talked about in 2 Samuel 17. We see his brother, and we see the other, they call them the sons of the giant, that are fought by David and his mighty men, right, in their wars against Philistines. So it's a family that we see. You know, I don't think it's much of a stretch to say that we're looking at the family of Goliath. The expectation is that we are. When they're driven out, that's where they go. So they're going to be a thorn in the side of Israel for a while. But yeah, I imagine they're pretty scary. They were scary hundreds of years later, and they're scary now when Israel sees them. They make that report out against them. The descendants of Anak came from the giants. It says, we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight. But who is it that has spoken up and said otherwise?
Caleb
quieted the people before Moses. Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it. Now Caleb has exactly the attitude that the Lord was looking for. Right? Because if, you know, through the eyes of faith, you know, a challenge like they've seen in Canaan should be what? There should be an opportunity to glorify God. Now, a similar attitude to that which David would show. Right? But in any case, it says they gave the children of Israel a bad report. The land through which we have gone is a land that devours its inhabitants. The people whom we saw entered are men of great stature. Okay? So we're gonna go through chapter 14, verses 1-4 today. So Robert, why don't you finish that for us today?
And all the congregation raised a loud voice, and the people wept that night. And all the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said to them, would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we have died in the wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword, our wives and our little ones will become prey? Would it not be better for us to go back to Egypt? And they said to one another, let us choose a leader and go back to Egypt.
Mm. So who does Israel listen to? What's the reaction of the people? Yeah, we listen to the ten. Huh? All through the night, they're wailing and they're crying. And they wept. They despaired. And complained against Moses and Aaron. What do they wish had happened to them? Yeah. Better that we died in Egypt. Better that we died on the way here. Anything would be better than having to go in and to fight these people. We have no chance. We'd be better off dead. In fact, we'd be better off as slaves. We'd be better off selecting a leader who will take us back to Egypt and let us go back. Okay, so as we talked about in the last question, and as Nathan mentioned in his sermon, go ahead and turn to Hebrews chapter 3. Nathan's already read for us today from Psalm 95, which is what we have quoted in Hebrews chapter 3, verses 7 through 11. We talked about, do not harden your hearts as in the day of rebellion. But let's pick it up in verse 12 and then just read through verse 19. Pick it up in verse 12, in Hebrews chapter 3, through verse 19. Vilma, do you have that?
Yes, sir. You said Hebrews 3:12 and 19?
Yes.
Take care, brethren, that there not be any one of you an evil, unbelieving heart that falls away from the living God. But encourage one another day after day, as long as it still calls today, so that none of you will be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. For we have become partakers of Christ, if we hold fast the beginning of our assurance firm until the end, while it is said, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as when they provoked you. For who provoked you when they had heard? Indeed, not all those who came out of Egypt led by Moses. And with whom was he angry for 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose bodies fell in the wilderness? And to whom did he swear that they would not enter his rest, but to those who were disobedient? So we see that they were not able to enter because of unbelief.
Okay. So what does the writer of Hebrews really say is the root of their problem? Why are they not going to enter the rest? What is it?
Unbelief.
And so, you know, we're clearly talking about this episode here. Is what's being referred to in Hebrews chapter 3. What we see in Numbers 13 and Numbers 14. Is that the first word that comes to mind when you look at Israel's attitude? Is it unbelief?
To me it's self-pity.
Self-pity? Yeah.
Woe is me, woe is us.
Okay. How else might you describe them? And when you read about the spies and you read about Israel's response with their wailing and their crying and their wanting to go back, wishing that they were just dead already. What are some of the words you would use to describe them? Yeah, Roy?
Spineless.
Okay.
Unfaithful.
Lack of confidence in the Lord.
Yeah. Lack of confidence in the Lord. Yeah.
Cowardice.
Cowardice. Okay. Well, I mean, clearly, they're afraid. They are afraid. Anything else?
They have no retention of what's been before them, from the plagues when they left Egypt, splitting of the Red Sea, the feeding. None of this registers with them that this was done by God as a favor to them.
Yeah. And you know, and we've talked about this. How long has it been since they came out of Egypt? About 2 years. They remained camped at Sinai for about 10 months. Right? So but roughly 2 years. That seems like a short amount of time to forget everything that the Lord has done for them. And what are some of the things that these people have seen in the last 2 years?
The crossing of the Red Sea, for one thing.
They passed through the Red Sea. They passed through it.
And the preacher said they were kicking up dust on the bottom of the Red Sea.
The bottom of the Red Sea, yeah. They saw the pillar of fire stand between them and the armies of Egypt. Right? Yes, Nathan?
More quail than you could ever imagine.
More quail than you could ever imagine. But they've seen manna, the likes of which has really never been seen. What? I mean, you go to bed and you wake up in the morning and there's everywhere. You can gather it from it. We make bread and they're sustained. And they're sustained by that in the wilderness for years. Or for a few years at this point. Right? What else? They've seen the plagues. Yes, John?
One thing is that God fought their battle for them when they left out of Egypt.
Yeah. And they seem to have the attitude, what do they expect to happen here? Do they think that God's going to be fighting their battles for them? No, they think it's all about them. They think it's all about them and their own power and their own strength, their own abilities, right? Yeah, God has brought us here, and now He's expecting us to go in and to conquer. Yeah, that's not really what the Lord has promised. What is it the Lord has said He's going to do? He said, "I'm going to give this to you." I'm going to give this to you.
The fault is all in Moses and Aaron.
What?
The fault is all in Moses and Aaron. It's nothing we've done. It's these two guys that up here. Huh. It's their fault.
Well, we need other leaders. These people are listening to the Lord. Yeah, but that's just some of what they've seen. I mean, they've seen the fire of the Lord upon the mountain. And they heard God speak to them from the mountain. Right? Those are all things that these people have seen in the last 2 years. Right? But now they think that this is something that there's just no way that can happen. Right, Robert?
They just seem to be very easy to manipulate. You know, they're not strong enough, and when somebody comes in and tells them, then they believe that.
Yeah,
and they can be manipulated to do everything against God's will.
Yeah. Nathan?
Yeah, maybe you could describe it as they have a very shallow faith.
Yeah.
Maybe it is only connected to the signs, but not a love and reverence.
Yeah.
For God.
Yeah, and it's been 2 years. They haven't really come to know God very well. I mean, they see some amazing things. And they know that God can do some amazing things, but they don't really seem to have come to know God the way, you know, certainly not the way Moses has come to know Him. But some have, right? Caleb has. Joshua has. Yeah. But not a lot of others. John?
And then they start questioning if God can do this and this.
Yeah. And how does complaining work in a big group? Does it usually arise spontaneously with, you know, lots of people all over the group?
It goes like cancer.
Yeah, it's like a cancer, and it only takes a few to start, right? And it puts that thought into people's heads. And I mean, it's you know, partly the nature of anxiety and worry and the way it works on us, right? And the nature of fear. Is it they work on us slowly, and things like that spread. And they spread like cancer in a group like that. So we might call it a lot of things, and it's interesting that the writer of Hebrews calls it unbelief. You know, Nathan talked about it as a shallowness of their faith. Because basically, what are they being asked to do? They're being asked to just trust the Lord. This is what the Lord has promised you. The Lord has promised you that He's going to give you this land. And like we said, the Lord knew what it was like. The Lord didn't need Jehovah didn't need the report from the spies to know that there are fearsome people living in big cities. Right? And you know, it's actually one of the things that causes archaeologists to question the whole idea of the conquest of Canaan. Because they don't see evidence of mass destruction of these cities happening about this time. Right? And is that surprising? No, because that's the way normal conquests work. Right? When Assyria invades Israel, or when Babylon invades Israel, that's the kind of thing that happens. They come in and they burn all the cities. And destroy everything, so then people have to rebuild it, right? And that leaves evidence that archaeologists are able to find. The conquest of Canaan, did it happen that way?
No, they went in and inhabited.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, with the exception of a few cities, Jericho and some others, for the most part, they were going to take over the land with cities intact. That's the way God was going to give it to them.
The Lord's going to drive the people out.
Yeah. The Lord's going to drive the people out, and they're going to take possession. They're going to take possession. Now, really, we talk about the conquest of Canaan. It's the Lord's conquest of Canaan, and the people just go up and possess it. Way it's going to work, but the writer here calls it unbelief. How is unbelief related to weak faith?
You tend to rely on yourself instead of God.
Yeah. You tend to rely on yourself instead of God. If you don't have enough faith in the promises that God gives you, then it's very hard to just take that step, huh? To just take that step and do what He says. And that's all that they're being asked to do. Now, it's interesting. Now, what would it have been like if instead of sending the spies, God had just sent them across the Jordan and started all of this, and then told them what to do? Well, we don't know. Maybe they wouldn't have been so afraid. But the point is that the Lord has done this and given this to them, as Carrie said earlier, as a test. They're being tested. They want you to go and to see. Right? Then they have the opportunity. They have the opportunity to either place their faith in God and trust Him, or to give in to fear and react the way they do. And so Israel fails that test. And so when we say unbelief, because they could not enter in because of unbelief. Yes, because they didn't believe enough in His promises. And they didn't believe enough in his, in Jehovah and in his power, and his ability to give them what he had promised to give them. So we can say that it's fear, we can say that it's cowardice, we can say it's a lot of these things, but it really does come down to a failure to trust the Lord. And the reason that people don't trust him, how different is that from today? What are some of the reasons why people cannot put their trust in the Lord?
They haven't seen him.
They haven't seen him. Yeah. What else? I mean, are the reasons any different today? No, they're just the same. There are a lot of people who can't fully trust in the Lord. There are people who can't accept that the Lord is going to forgive their sins. There are people who are unable to turn away from the world and the way the world thinks and put their trust in what God has said. Because the way God tells us to live, of course, is very different than the way the world says. And for some people, that just doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense that the meek shall inherit the earth. You know, and it manifests in a number of ways. People can't trust the Lord enough to be humble. People can't trust the Lord enough to submit. And that's a big issue, I think, today and in this country, where people have such a sense of autonomy and independence, and I should be able to determine, you know, the best way for me to live. You know, an inability to trust the Lord. And I think when we look at that, we have to characterize that as basically a heart of unbelief. Not willing to believe. No, and as we talk about the New Testament, is belief just accepting something in your mind? No. It's moving forward. It means you have to believe it enough and trust in it enough that you take action upon it. Right? I mean, if you came with something that maybe a stock tip or something. If I believed you, then I would take action upon it. If I didn't believe you, I wouldn't. And a lot of times, you know, people want to talk about belief as some kind of intellectual exercise, but they're not then willing to take the step and to act on it and to do. You know, that if I really trust you, or if I really trust God, if I really trust that what God says is true, then I will do this. Right? And in this moment and at this time, for Israel, if they really trusted God and they really believed in God, then they would react as Caleb did and say, let's go. Let's go. Right? But that's not what's going to happen. And we're going to see the consequences of that and God's response to that, unfortunately, on Wednesday. Okay? All right. Thank you.